It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 119 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
We've spent the last two episodes looking at the conversion kits for the Rebel Alliance and Galactic Empire factions, so today we're going to be finishing off this series by talking about the Scum and Villainy conversion kits for X-Wing 2nd Edition.
Yeah, we got done talking about the boring factions, so now we get to talk about the only faction that matters, Scum and Villainy.
And I know you're excited, Carson, because it means we get to spend more time talking about your beloved Hawks.
We got Hawks, we got Fangs, Star Vipers, Aggressors, Shadowcasters, lots to talk about. Even Fire Sprays look pretty exciting again, which is awesome. I think I might even find some new favorite ships.
Yeah, lots of cool stuff coming in this conversion kit, so we're going to break it all down for you, look at the major changes, and talk about X-Wing 2nd Edition. So we're wrapping up our conversation on conversion kits here, focusing in on that Scum and Villainy conversion kit. If you're not aware, the second edition of the game is going to have conversion kits, so that if you have an existing first edition X-Wing collection, you'll be able to buy these conversion kits. That'll come with all the necessary cardboard punch, pilot, and upgrade cards that you'll need to take your first edition models into the second edition of the game.
Yeah, it will also include some medium bases, which is much needed because Scum has quite a few interesting medium base ships. That new ship size introduced with 2nd edition. Ships like your Fire Sprays or Aggressors are now going to be medium bases. And even ships like the Mist Hunter are now moving up in size and going to be a medium base, which will all take quite a bit of getting used to.
Yeah, and I think we should actually start by talking about the Fire Spray and the Fang Fighter, because these are two ships that are going to release with the 2nd edition Wave 1 content. It's a little weird right now with 2nd edition, and we're not sure how the tournament formats are going to break down. But what we know is that the conversion kits for three of the five main factions that are going to be coming with this first wave are going to cover all the released Rebel Alliance, Imperial, and Scum and Villainy ships that we've seen in 1st edition. And they're also going to be re-releasing ships in the kind of the actual official 2nd edition first wave. And for Scum and Villainy, that's going to be comprised entirely of the Fire Spray and the Fang Fighter.
Right, so they got a good Mandalorian theme there, which is pretty cool.
And the Fire Spray is a good place to start off because it is showcasing off that new medium base and some updated 2nd edition features that we didn't see on the 1st edition version of the ship.
Yeah, well, and the Slave One is just such an iconic Scum ship. It's featured in two of the films. And then, of course, you have the Fang Fighter, which is the popular ship from the Rebel series. So I think it makes sense to go with the really iconic Scum ships. I mean, the Scum faction is kind of the least iconic of the three. So it makes sense, I think, for them to make it as iconic as possible on those initial releases.
And on the Fire Spray, we see some of those new design elements from 2nd edition right away. The 1st edition version of the Fire Spray did have forward and rear fire arcs. It had a forward primary and a rear auxiliary. Here, you're functionally getting the same thing in 2nd edition, except now those are separate values that are noted on the pilot cards. So you have a front value with 3 and a rear arc value of 3. Which is not functionally that different from the get-go, but it does open up some design space there for specifying on upgrade cards and whatnot different effects that might affect different firing arcs.
Well, and even though the stats of those firing arcs remain the same, I think they have kind of a different implication now that it is on a medium base ship. We saw the ARC 170 and TIE Special Forces fighter be pretty successful with their forward and rear firing arcs because they were on that smaller platform. They were able to, I think, utilize the dual arcs a little bit better, whereas a larger base ship had a much larger void of firing arcs on its side. So I think moving down to the medium base, having a little bit smaller base, will also help those firing arcs on the Fire Spray quite a bit.
We also see some updated actions on the Fire Spray. It's still got that focus action and target lock action, but now we've added a boost action, which is really strong. That was pretty much a staple card on the original Fire Spray, getting engine upgrade on there to add that boost action. Here we're seeing it come natively on this Fire Spray. We also see access to a red reinforce action, which is similar to what we saw in 1st edition, but the reinforce mechanics have been tweaked a little bit.
Right, and that boost action is going to be really big. I always wanted to put the engine upgrade on my Fire Sprays when playing them, because those one bank boosts tweaking your firing arc was really helpful, especially for that rear firing arc. And that reinforce action is also pretty exciting. Fire Sprays, you know, they have a decent amount of hit points, but if you go up against a swarm of an opponent's, those multiple attacks will really bring it down pretty quickly.
And the boost is going to feel differently now that the Fire Spray is a medium-based ship, whereas before a large-based ship boosting covers a whole lot of area. You're still going to cover quite a bit of area with the medium base, but it's going to be less than it is with a large base. The red reinforce action is actually also going to add quite a bit to the survivability of the Fire Spray. Obviously, it's a red action, so when you perform it, you're going to receive a stress token. New feature of 2nd Edition added some more design space there for actions. Reinforced does work a little bit differently than in 1st Edition. In 1st Edition, it just added an evade result if the ship was targeting you in the area you reinforced in. Now they've added a caveat to that where reinforce can't completely cancel damage. So let's say you're reinforcing out the rear, your opponent rolls two hits, you'll cancel one of those hits, you'll still suffer the other one. And if you're still reinforcing and you take one hit, you won't be able to cancel all hits completely. So it's kind of reducing damage to a minimum of one.
We also see two different titles for the Fire Spray. We have the Slave 1 title, which reads, after you reveal a turn or bank maneuver, you may set your dial to a maneuver of the same speed and bearing in the other direction. So this is going to be that same pilot ability that we saw in the original Imperial Boba Fett pilot, but now you can put it on any Fire Spray.
It's actually a little bit better than the old Imperial Boba Fett too. That one only worked on bank maneuvers. This one works on turns or banks, so there's a little bit more flexibility there. And it still adds a torpedo slot to the Slave 1, so you've got some more upgrade options if you throw that title on there.
Yeah, and this ability is really good on the Fire Spray. A Fire Spray is all about keeping that arc consistently on your opponent. That's where we talk about how the narrower sides on the medium base is going to help. Having that boost action is going to help. Well, here with that Slave 1 title, making sure you have the appropriate maneuver and can respond to your opponent's movements so that they aren't able to get outside of your arc. It's very nice. It should allow you to consistently leverage the advantage of that 3-dice secondary rear firing arc.
But that Slave 1 title also has to compete with another Fire Spray title called the Marauder. This one reads, while you perform a primary rear arc attack, you may reroll one attack die. And that's pretty strong on its own. There's not a whole lot of mechanics that allow you to reroll dice in 2nd edition of the game, so having access to that is awesome. It's also really interesting because it adds the gunnery slot to the Fire Spray.
Right, so this really poses an interesting question. Do you want the modification, or do you want the mobility? In my opinion, I usually go for modification, but I really like the Slave 1 ability.
I think either way you go, it's really cool to see even a ship like a Fire Spray that had a kind of a more solidified role in the 1st edition of the game be a lot more flexible in how you can load it out. And seeing that new medium base is going to be really awesome. And I'm glad to see this is going to be one of the like official X-Wing 2nd edition first wave ships that's out there. That's just really, really cool to me. We also have the Fang Fighter, which is going to be coming in that 2nd edition first wave. This ship, of course, first appeared in the Rebels television show, and it's actually a really cool design. We now know that the wings on the Fang Fighter are going to rotate around the chassis, so that's going to be a cool new feature that we'll see with those 2nd edition sculpts.
Yeah, I put a lot of time and effort into converting my models so that they would rotate. I think the new resculpts look pretty cool, so I might have to pick up even more rotating fangs.
Fang Fighters here have an unchanged stat line from their first edition, still going to have that attack, primary attack value of 3, agility value of 3, and 4 hull. And they have a similar action arrangement, but now shown off that 2nd edition linked action ability. So they still have just a focus action and a target lock action, and they have both a barrel roll and boost repositioning actions, each of which can link into a red focus action.
Yeah, and this is really cool. So now those Fang Fighters can still reposition, either getting a barrel roll or a boost, and then still have a focus for modification if they want. And it won't really matter too much about getting the stress tokens on your Fang, because they still have quite a few blue maneuvers.
I also like here how the Fang Fighters really differentiate themselves from ships like the TIE Interceptor and the Imperial faction. These have a very distinct feel. The Interceptors are very mobile, and they can link those repositioning actions into each other. Here we see on the Fang Fighter that you can't link a boost into a barrel roll or a barrel roll into a boost, but you can link that repositioning action into a red focus, which to me is a little bit reminiscent of running a Tawny Mind Link on a Fang Fighter back in 1st edition.
Right. I would often be repositioning my Fen Rao so that I could get in that ideal range one spot, roll my extra attack dice, and use my support ships to give me that focus modification.
We also see the Fang Fighter here showcasing a ship ability, which is a new feature in 2nd edition. Ships can have inherent abilities, so it doesn't matter what pilot you're flying. Fang Fighters all have access to the Concordia Face-Off ship ability.
Right, so this is reminiscent of the old Concord Dawn Protector title. So the Concordia Face-Off grants you the ability that while you're defending, if the attack is at range one and you are inside the attacker's forward firing arc, you can change one of your green dice results to an evade result.
And while this sounds similar to the old Conquer Dawn Protector title, there's actually two distinct changes we see here. The old Conquer Dawn Protector title would actually add an evade result, which could go beyond the number of green dice you're rolling. So if you're rolling three green dice, you could add actually a fourth result and get potentially four evades. Here, you're just changing one of your die results into an evade, so it's not going to increase the cap of maximum evades you could roll.
But you don't have to have the ship in your firing arc, which was an old condition that you needed to have. But it still feels very much the same because it's like adding an evade token, which now is not as impactful. An evade token now just converts one result to an evade as well. So it makes sense that that was scaled down accordingly.
Well, that's just a design change that the developers have said they were trying to do, remove as many of those added results, make those really rare. We do see some abilities in the second edition that add evade results, but they're very infrequent. It's going to be a lot more common to see effects changing results.
Yeah, so the card on the Fang Fighters is going to be formatted a little different, but I think the ship is going to play just like it used to, and I think that's great, because Fang Fighters were really fun to fly, and I think they're going to stay really fun to fly.
And that Concordia face-off ability is very familiar, so you're still going to be encouraged to fly these ships really aggressively.
Which is great. Yeah, so next we thought it'd be fun to talk about the aggressors, because our recent world champion, Simeon De La Pina, won using two aggressors. So let's see how they look in the second edition.
We see some pretty distinct second edition changes right away. Rather than a large base, aggressors are now medium-base ships, and they saw a slight hit point change there. They went from having four shields and four hull into having just three shields and five hull, a conversion we saw a lot in the Rebel faction to make these ships a little more susceptible to the criticals in the damage deck.
Right, and then they have a big difference. They're going to have a calculate action replacing their focus action. So this is a new action that is worse than a focus. So normally when you spend a focus, you can convert all of your focus results on your die roll to either hits or evades. When you spend a calculate token, it's going to work the same way as a force charge. You can just convert one focus result on your roll to either a hit or an evade.
And it's a fact that a single calculate token is worse than a single focus token just because you're not going to get the kind of modification you normally could get. But once you start to pile up multiple calculate tokens, there's actually an advantage to having the calculates over the focus tokens. And we see that here with the aggressor and their ship ability, the advanced droid brain. After you perform a calculate action, you gain one calculate token. So every time they perform that calculate action, they're going to get an additional calculate token.
Right. So now two calculate tokens versus one focus token is interesting. Because on a single die roll, you can get comparable modification. Converting two focus results is usually as good as a focus token. Because usually you don't roll that many focus results. I mean, there's some outlier cases where all four dice turn up focuses, and then definitely the focus token will be better. But, you know, when defending against multiple attacks, the ability to convert one focus on multiple attacks using, you know, two different calculate tokens, I think it'll be a lot more valuable in quite a few scenarios.
This also grants you the opportunity to use those calculate tokens on both offense and defense, whereas normally if you have a focus token, you're going to have to pick whether you're going to use it offensively or save it for defense. Here you have that option. Hey, if you get shot at and you roll a focus result, you can spend one to add to your defense, and then when you're attacking, you've got the other one there to increase your offense.
Yeah, I mean, and the aggressors still have all their other actions. They have evade, boost, and target lock. But that advanced droid brain does make that calculate action pretty enticing. Their dial does get a slight improvement. You can now also do a white four forward, which is good. I mean, their dial was already pretty great, but I did find myself in quite a few scenarios where, oh, I wish I could go just a little bit faster. So that's nice. And the aggressors are an interesting ship because they don't have any generic pilots. All of their pilots are unique. You have four IG-88s. And then their abilities all synergize with each other.
Yeah, when they have the IG-2000 title equipped, they share the pilot abilities of all of their ships with the IG-2000 title. And we see some very similar pilot abilities here with one distinct difference. When we're looking at ships like IG-88B, after you perform an attack that misses, you may perform a bonus cannon attack. That's very similar to its first edition counterpart. We also see IG-88C is almost exactly the same. After you perform a boost action, you may perform an evade action. So these are very similar to their first edition versions. We do see some changes in IG-88D and IG-88A.
All right, so IG-88D reads, while you execute a Segnor's loop maneuver, you may use another template of the same speed instead, either the turn of the same direction or the straight template. So when you dial in a right 3 Segner's loop, you have the option to, of course, still just execute the maneuver you dialed in, or change that to a right 3-speed turn template and execute that maneuver just as you would a Segner's loop, having your ship facing 180 degrees from where you would execute a right turn. Or you have the option to perform a 3-speed K-turn. Now, originally on IG-88D, you could just do the 3-bank sloop or the 3-turn, but having that option to do a straight maneuver is pretty cool.
And this ability is really cool because it's actually kind of reactive. You can see where all the lower initiative ships will end up before you decide exactly what kind of turnaround maneuver you want to do. And it is definitely better than that first edition because now you have the option to change it rather than just into that hard turn sloop. You can turn it into just a standard K-turn. So some really cool versatility there. We also see a completely new ability on IG-88A. At the start of the engagement phase, you may choose one friendly ship with Calculate on its action bar at range 1 to 3. If you do, transfer one of your Calculate tokens to it.
Right, so now we're seeing even extra value for piling up those Calculate tokens. Now you can pass around kind of like an old Manru ability. So if you have two aggressors and they both take that Calculate action, and they both have two Calculate actions, well then IG-88A could throw over one of its Calculate tokens to IG-88D. And you could go with one Calculate token on A and three Calculate tokens on D.
And this ability stretches beyond the IG-88s. You can do it to any ship that has access to that Calculate on its action bar. So any other scum ship with a droid pilot that's going to have Calculate, you're going to be able to get some cool list synergies there. It's throwing extra Calculate tokens on a ship. And we know that mathematically, it's more beneficial to have even more Calculate tokens on a ship.
Right. So if you have one of your ships in a really dangerous position, you can concentrate your actions there, which feels very calculating.
The Aggressor looks like it's going to be a pretty cool ship. I'm excited to see where it is in this game. I don't think it's going to feel exactly like it did in first edition. We know that in general, cannons are a little weaker than they were in the first edition of the game. So IG-88B isn't going to be the powerhouse it once was, especially since it doesn't have access to the original version of Fire Control System.
Yeah, with cannons seeming like they've gotten quite a major reworking and toned down in power, I think you're going to want to move away from B. But I think there's still some pretty exciting options to try out there.
Another ship that's got a pretty big overhaul in second edition is the Star Viper. Now, the Star Viper's always been kind of a sad story. In first edition, even from launch, it was not a particularly strong ship. And then even after we saw a fix in the Guns for Hire expansion, it still never reached a very high competitive level.
Yeah, and the Star Viper now in second edition, I think it's going to feel a lot like the Star Viper at the end of the original edition. Its stats are going to be the same, but it does have the Micro Thrusters ability, which is the same as the Mark II title, where while you perform a barrel roll, you must use the left or right 1-speed bank templates instead of the straight template.
And this is actually really important for second edition, even though this is pretty much the same ability we saw the Star Viper receive at the end of first edition. This is really important in second edition because there's not a lot of token or action stacking, and when there is, it's very limited in this game. And what's interesting about using a bank template for a barrel roll is you're basically getting the value of two repositioning actions in one, where normally if you're just doing a barrel roll, that's going to shift your position slightly but keep your arc oriented the same way. And if you do a boost, you're going to get some forward movement and shift your arc, but it's not as nuanced to control. So here you're kind of getting the benefit of both shifting your arc like you would with a boost and getting that lateral movement so you don't have to necessarily move closer to your opponent. So basically it's two actions for one.
All right, and now if we look at its actions, it's got the focus, target lock, and then the barrel roll and boost actions linked into red focus actions. So the exact same action bar as the Fang Fighter. Now the Star Viper did traditionally suffer by not having enough modification, but now most ships in the second edition won't have that much modification. So I think it'll be at an even playing field there, which maybe that will be enough. And, you know, having that barrel roll, which we talked about being very powerful with those micro thrusters, and then still being able to link that into a red focus action so you can get really good repositioning and still have some modification, I think is pretty enticing.
I'm actually really excited for the Starviper in second edition. This was a ship I always wanted to be a little bit better in first edition. And we saw a small dial improvement there, which was something the Starviper definitely needed. It's got additional green maneuvers in the form of some two banks. That's going to help it a lot recovering from those red S loops. And I really actually like the pilots we're seeing right now. We know that we've got Zizor there at initiative 4, similar ability to shift damage to allied ships. And then Guri at the very high initiative 5. It's got calculate instead of the focuses, but you're still going to be able to get that focus token if you end at range 1. So similar ability on Guri. I think she's going to be really fun to fly.
Oh yeah, I mean, Guri looks really interesting. Having those calculate actions, but then still be able to get a focus with your pilot ability, so you can get even extra modification and getting rewarded for getting up close and personal.
We saw some changes to some other scum ships too. The Kyraz fighters saw a hit point improvement from 4-hull-in-1 shield into 5-hull-in-1 shield, so a little bit tankier. It still got the focus and target lock action, but now it has access to a white barrel roll, which repositioning is really vital, so most ships, particularly small ships in second edition, get some kind of repositioning action.
Yeah, and I actually like the hit point adjustment a lot here. The Kyraz is the scum X-Wing, and as the X-Wing has gone up in hit points, well, so should the Kyraz. Its dial does lose its 5-speed K-turn, but gains 2-speed Talon rolls, and its 3-straight is now also blue. So I think that's a pretty improved dial.
Well, it's also showcasing a new thing in 2nd edition here. The developers were saying in the Fantasy Flight unboxing video that the Kyraz fighter actually has 3 modification slots. So in the first edition of the game, a modification wasn't a printed slot. It was just an ability every ship could take 1 modification upgrade card. Now it's actually a slot included on the ship, much like any other slot is, and ships can have multiple or have none. So the Kyraz fighter has 3 modifications. Actually, the TIE Interceptor, they said, has 2 modification slots. So we're seeing some things that were added to the ship later on in first edition through the Voxai title where it could get multiple modifications now being included in the core chassis of the Kyraz fighter.
Yeah, I mean, these ships are all hard to rate right now because we don't know what all of their upgrade slots are. We don't know how many points they're going to cost. And those upgrade slots really do define the roles that ships play. So having a bunch of modification slots for the Kyraz does sound pretty interesting. It means you should be able to kit these out for, you know, pretty differing roles.
And much in the same way that the Kyraz fighter is now pretty much the first edition Voxai version, the M3A Sick Interceptor is now very much the heavy Sick version that we saw in first edition.
Right, so it's got that extra hull built in. It's got 3-hull and 1 shield. And it's got the weapon hardpoint ability. You can equip 1 cannon, torpedo, or missile upgrade. I think this is kind of interesting to have printed, because in theory, they could have just done this with some programming on the app. And just after you equip 1, you can't equip any others. So it's kind of interesting for them to have to spell that out on the card.
Yeah, it is kind of weird to see list building rules kind of both be printed and not printed, because none of the upgrades or pilot cards in 2nd edition are going to have their point values printed directly on the card. Those are all going to be determined and kept track of through the app and through the website. But at the same time, I guess they do have to include these abilities here so you have a general idea of what kind of slots your ship can take. Either way, I think it's going to be cool to see the M3A Interceptor here in its new version. Having that extra hit point was huge. The Sick never really stood a chance with just the 2-hull-in-1 shield. And developer Alex Davies said that it's actually a lot more of a reasonable decision to run a Sick Interceptor with just a torpedo or a missile. Cannons are generally a little bit weaker in 2nd edition, and torpedoes and missiles are actually a little bit more efficient on their own, particularly now that they have additional charges. So having a torpedo means you could get to fire 2 or 3 times.
Right, and when you only have 4 hit points, you're probably not firing more than twice anyways, so get the damage while you can. Yeah, I hope Sikhs are good. They're such a cool looking ship, and they were just never really that great in the original edition. So here's to hoping for second edition. It's all going to come down to points, and if you can efficiently put some good threats on these ships. I got a converted Sikh with a cannon on it that I really need to put on the table, so hopefully it works out.
Might pair well with a Hawk.
Probably.
We also saw some changes to the quad jumper here. Its stat line is going to be the same. 2 attack dice, 2 agility, 5 hull. It's gaining a red evade action in addition to its focus and barrel roll actions. And we saw some changes to its dial. So it added the 1 banks there. It no longer has the really awkward 1 forward or 1 turn options. You got the whole range there in the 1 speed. And we saw some changes to its very unique reverse maneuvers. This was the only ship in the game that had reverse maneuvers up until 2nd edition. And we saw the 1 reverse turn into a 2 reverse there. So it creates that really interesting opportunity of performing that red 2 reverse, then performing a 2 green straight, clear the stress, and then perform a red two reverse and then a two green straight clear the stress. So you can kind of just go back and forth in the same position.
Yeah, it's cool to see them being a little bit more liberal with the dial. On this ship, only ever really saw niche play, but I know it has a bit of a cult following, so I'm hoping that those people who've dedicated the time to the quad jumper and really learning its nuances will be rewarded with that improved dial. I think there's a lot more tricky maneuvers you can do, especially when you're outwitting your opponent and setting up that space tug tractor array action.
The space tug tractor array is now built into the ship here through its ship ability. It says, action, choose a ship in your forward firing arc at range 1. That ship gains 1 tractor token, or 2 if it's in your bullseye firing arc at range 1.
Here we see just another great design choice in rewarding people for lining up that difficult bullseye arc.
And this is especially relevant now that tractor tokens actually scale with ship size. So in first edition, the only ships that could be moved by a tractor token were the small base ships. Now in second edition, even medium and large base ships can be moved by tractor tokens. You just need extra tokens.
Right, so 2 for medium and 3 for large. Same as ion tokens, which is good to have a bit of standardized design there.
And we know tractor tokens are a powerful game mechanic there, reducing agility and moving ships potentially. But I also like the space tech tractor array because it calls attention to another design element here we have in second edition where you can actually, through the avenue of ship abilities, create specific actions for specific ships.
Right. I mean, so this is a very specialized action that is unique to the quad jumper. And that's really cool. It also is a non-action bar action. So upgrades that are granting actions, those go straight to your action bar. So things that reference actions on your action bar might mean one thing, but this space tug tractor array can't be targeted.
Yeah, some sweet changes to the quad jumper. Hopefully it will find a better role in second edition than it ever did in first edition.
All right, moving on, we got the Camogula Fighter, the original bullseye ship. That large model has been rightfully upgraded to a medium base, as well as getting an extra hull point. It's on a bigger base, it should feel a little beefier. I think that's good.
Yeah, it's now got 7 hull and 2 shields. It's still got the focus and target lock actions. It has a barrel roll action still, but it's now a red barrel roll, but it still has that really awesome white reload action where it can receive a weapons disabled token and get one of its charges back for one of its secondary weapons. Beyond that, though, there's not a lot of huge changes here to the Kimikila. It did get a dial improvement there where its 2 hard turns are now white instead of red, so it's got a little bit more mobility there. And it actually retains the effect of the original bullseye firing arc from first edition.
Right, so it's got the ship ability Dead to Rights. While you perform an attack, if the defender is in your bullseye firing arc, defense dice cannot be modified using green tokens. Which is good because now every ship has a bullseye firing arc. The Camogula, the original bullseye ship, should have something that makes its bullseye firing arc feel distinct and different.
And I'm hoping the ship can still carry some kind of ordnance, torpedoes, or missiles or something, because that Dead to Rights ability sounds like it'll be amazing with the second edition ordnance.
Well, it's got the reload action. It needs something to reload.
We actually saw some really substantial changes to the G1A Starfighter, aka the Mist Hunter. It's now a medium-based ship instead of a small. It got a hit point increase like we've seen on a lot of these scum ships, going from 4-hull 4 shields to 5-hull 4 shields. And it gained the jam action in addition to its target lock and focus actions.
Yeah, so it did lose the evade action, but jam is pretty interesting. We don't know exactly what it does in second edition, but I'm guessing it's going to be pretty similar to how it works in first edition, because that design still isn't even out yet, so I can't imagine it'd be that different.
And we're seeing its role change in other ways, too. The Mist Hunter before felt kind of comparable to the Rebel B-Wing. It's really, even beyond the medium base and hit point increase, changing its role. Its dial is significantly slower and actually features a 0 stop maneuver now. It's got 1 less blue maneuver because its 3 straight has changed. And it shortened one of its K-turns. So in general, the dial there is going to move a little bit slower. So I think this is going to be more of a jousting efficiency kind of heavy hit point ship with some control effects thanks to that jam action.
Well, I think they've done a good job at making the G1A, the Camogula, and then we're going to talk about the Skurg coming up next, all feel very distinct. I mean, part of it is those actions, right? Having that jam action. Well, this is going to be a bit more of a control-oriented ship, whereas that Camogula Fighter is going to be much more of a munition-oriented ship. And while their stats are pretty similar, I think with those action distinctions and probably their upgrade slots, going to make them be pretty distinct ships.
It looks like the Skurg Bomber is going to probably fulfill much more of a role as a bomber, since we're seeing the other two kind of fill in the other slots for the faction. It is a medium base, and it saw a slight hit point change here from 5-hole 5 shields into 6-hole 4 shields, so again, a little bit more susceptible to that crit deck. And we're seeing its white barrel roll turn into a red barrel roll here. It still has access to the focus and target lock actions.
Yeah, actually, I think what's pretty interesting about the Skurg is not having a reload action. And we saw the K-Wing, which was the Rebel equivalent of the Skurg, get the reload action. I feel pretty good about the Skurg not getting the reload action. Otherwise, it'd feel probably too similar to the Kmogila. So now, hopefully, this will be just more of a bombing ship and not the super munition delivery that it was in the original edition.
The Scum faction is still going to retain access to the Y-Wing and the Z-95 Headhunter. The Y-Wing is pretty much the same as we saw it in the Rebel conversion kits here. Slight hit point change to 6-hull and 2 shields. Beyond that, it doesn't look like it's going to have too many particular Scum functions. The Z-95 is similar. It's going to have, in general, lower initiative, much like it did in first edition when compared to the Rebel variant, but it also is going to have access to that illicit slot there, so you're going to have some very distinct Scum features only accessible on the Scum Z95.
Yeah, it also gets a 4-speed red K-turn, but I think what's going to be most interesting about the Z95 is its implications with the YV-666 light freighter. We know there's the Nashta Pup Pilot, which reads, you can deploy only via emergency deployment, and you have the name, initiative, pilot ability, and ship charges of the friendly destroyed Houndstooth. So that should sound familiar if you're familiar with the Nashta Pup from the original edition. It's got the escape craft setup ship ability, which the other Z95s don't have, just the Nashta Pup does. So that's pretty cool. We see a unique ship ability that reads, requires Houndstooth title. You must begin the game docked with the Houndstooth. This should all make more sense once we get to the YV-666.
Yeah, I mean, no reason to not talk about it now. We've seen the Nashta Pup before in first edition, and what we're seeing on the YV-666 now, beyond just the changes that we see to its stat line, 9-hole and 3 shields instead of 6 and 6, it's also got the reinforce action focus and target lock here. But what the developers have said is they've actually standardized the docking mechanics across all ships in the game, regardless of faction or chassis. So in the rulebook, there's going to be standard rules for how docking and deployment works on each ship. So it's not going to change from ship to ship like we saw in first edition, because the Houndstooth and the Nashta Pup function differently than the Ghost did, which functioned differently than the Gazanti did. Here we've got the same rule set across all ships in the game. Which actually means, beyond the Nashta Pup, which you can equip to the YV-666, you can actually dock any Z95 in the YV-666. The difference between the Nashta Pup is that it can only deploy via emergency deployment when the Houndstooth is destroyed, whereas any Z95 could deploy, presumably, from the Houndstooth at a different point in the game.
Right, and this is representing the pilot of the YV getting into that Nashta Pup as your escape craft.
And the main difference we see here is that when you're putting the Nashta Pup in the YV-666, that's going to be a cheaper point cost, but it can only deploy when it blows up, whereas you could put any other Z95 in there, but you're going to pay the full cost for that Z95.
Yeah, and so this makes that YV really interesting. I mean, we saw it originally be a pretty good damage-dealing kind of bruiser, big ship, but now it could serve more of a utility support role, which is pretty crazy. I like the idea of saving your Z95, maybe give it a close-range missile, wait till you get close, and then dropping out and delivering your payload.
And actually, we can't discount the reinforce action on this thing. It's a white reinforce, which is really valuable. They're not going to stress out the YV-666. And that reinforce action is going to make this 12-hit-point ship really durable. Even though we saw it reduce its shield value in favor of more hull, reducing that damage over time is going to be really valuable, especially since you have that extra wide fire arc on the YV-666.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what players do with this YV. This feels very different, and I think in a good way.
All right, so we've got two more Scum and Villainy ships we need to talk about before we get to the real winner of all, I guess, the entire X-Wing game, the best ship in the entire X-Wing game, right, Carson?
Yeah, I mean, now it's time to talk about the turrets, but it's okay, it ends on a good note.
The Jumpmaster 5000 is very different than what we saw in the first edition of the game. It now features a two-dice, single-arc rotating, basically a mobile firing arc, what we'd see in first edition here. This is different than a lot of the other ships converting from first edition to second edition. We've seen ships like the Decimator or the YT-1300, which were primary weapon turreted ships in the first game. When they converted over to second edition, they got that weird little Bowtie firing arc where it would either be front and back or left and right. Here we're seeing a primary weapon turret ship convert to just a single arc. So you're either going to be in that forward, back, left, or right quadrant, not two at a time.
Right, so it's going to function like that Shadowcaster firing arc, except you're going to be missing your front firing arc. You only have a mobile arc.
It's also weird, too, because it doesn't come with any white rotate actions. The only way you can rotate that arc is by using the focus action to link into a red rotate or the target lock action to link into a red rotate.
Yeah, I actually like this a lot flavorfully. The Jumpmaster 5000 is sort of a janky ship that's kind of just jury-rigged together. And I think it feels a lot more like that now. These actions, they're not working as smooth as you want them to. The only way you get to rotate that firing arc is taking a stress token. And then when we see the rebalanced dial, it's definitely not going to feel like that smooth, well-oiled machine that it was in the original X-Wing.
Well, the first edition version was way too efficient for what it was, so it's nice to see it toned down here appropriately, I think, for the second edition of the game. It still has access to a barrel roll, but it's a red barrel roll here, so a lot of stress actions on that action bar. It's got a slight hit point change too, from 5-hole 4 shields to 6-hole and 3 shields, again getting a little bit worse there on the trade-off for hit points. And the dial is balanced a lot better, again focusing on favoring one side over the other, but it's not so overwhelmingly good like it was in the first edition of the game.
Yeah, this is the asymmetrical dial I thought we were going to get on the original release of the Jumpmaster. It's got a 3-speed left red sloop maneuver, and no right sloop maneuver, and none of its turns are green, but its right turns are red.
In the first edition of the game, I always felt like the asymmetrical dial was really like, it had an okay side on the right and an amazing side on the left. Now we actually feel more of a balance here. We're like, hey, the right side is actually kind of bad. You don't have a sloop over there, but the left side is really good. So I think this is a much better version of that asymmetrical dial. And we'll actually give this ship a distinct feel, especially since you only have that single arc, turret arc.
Right. I mean, so you're going to want to circle around your opponent, kind of in the way you used to play Shadowcasters. But you can only really circle one direction well. So I think that'll make for some pretty interesting gameplay. See if your opponent can force you to making suboptimal maneuvers, which will be interesting. I think there'll be a lot more gameplay with this.
To go with the updated Jumpmaster, we have an updated Punishing One title. It reads, while you perform a primary attack, if the defender is in your forward arc, roll one additional attack die. You lose the crew slot, but gain the astromech slot here. This is a much more balanced design, I think. It emphasizes forward arcs, and you actually have to set that mobile firing arc to the forward slot if you want to get the benefit from the Punishing One title.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. We know Dengar's pilotability also only works in the forward firing arc. So you do have the option to rotate that arc, but there's some incentive for keeping it forward.
Well, and with regard to Dengar's ability, which we know functions based on charges, so it's only going to trigger once per round here anyway, you actually still have access to torpedoes on the Jumpmaster, so even if you have your arc moved, you can still use Dengar's return shot ability with the torpedo. All right, before we get to the King of All Spaceships, we still got to talk about the Shadowcaster here, which was a ship that was very relevant.
Hey, the Shadowcaster's fine. It's fine.
This ship was very relevant at the end of the first edition of the game. Still got some cool stuff going on here. We're seeing a stat change again, favoring hull over shields. 7-hole and 3 shields turns into 8-hole and 2 shields. And we're seeing its weapon value split here. So it still has that functionally a mobile firing arc there with its turret firing arc. It has a primary value of 3, so it's always got 3 dice coming out the front. And that mobile arc can rotate anywhere around, giving you an attack value of 2.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. I mean, you have the same arc spread as the original one, but reduced attack dice out of your mobile arc. I mean, seeing the rework done to all the other turreted ships, this is pretty fine. It means you're going to have to work a little bit harder to set up that forward firing arc and make some interesting choices. The pilot abilities are still going to work very similar to how they used to, triggering off of that mobile firing arc. So now you have to choose, you know, set up that pilot ability or and roll less attack dice, or double down and just put them both pointed forward.
We still have Asajj Ventress flying the ship, who has a very similar stress-dealing ability that we saw in first edition, except there's some counterbalancing points there.
And she's got some force charges. But let's circle back on the ship's actions. So it still has the same actions. It's got the focus, evade, target lock, and rotate. But having those force charges is pretty great. So this is Scum's only force user. The force users are seemingly pretty powerful. And I think that just inherently is going to make Asajj pretty great. I mean, being able to take that evade action and still have force charges to convert focus results on defense as well seems pretty great. Having basically focus and evade plus those 10 hit points. I mean, that's right where I want to be with a Shadowcaster.
Well, and hopefully this thing has a crew slot too, so you can throw that Maul crew on there, boost your force rating, and get some other cool effects.
No, you gotta put Maul on Ketsu and spread the love.
Alright, now Carson, we can actually talk about the ship you're really most excited for in 2nd edition. Actually, you're most excited for in 1st edition, it was just never really that good. The Hawk 290.
Give me back Itani and I'll... Yeah, I mean, Hawk 290, looking at that first stat change, you can't get any better than going from one attack dice to two. Just doubled its efficiency.
Well, we talk about the change between two dice and three attack dice being huge. I think the change between one and two is probably the biggest in the game, right?
Absolutely. That we've seen thus far. So it's got a two dice rotating single arc. So the same way that Jumpmaster firing arc is going to work. But now on the small base Hawk.
And this is one of the few ships that actually saw a positive change to its hit points here, where it went from 4-hull and 1 shield into 3-hull and 2 shields. So you got an extra shield.
Well, all those extra shields had to go somewhere. Yeah, and it's got a crazy action bar. The Hawk originally just had the focus and target lock actions. Now, did a double take when I looked at that action bar, because there's just so many. It's got the focus and target lock actions. Both link into red rotate actions. It also has a white rotate, as well as a red boost and a red jam. Obviously, when you get those rotating arcs, you need the rotate action. Did not expect to get both a boost and a jam action, but I'm pretty excited about both of those.
Yeah, gaining access to a repositioning action and a control effect inherently on the Hawk 290 is huge for this ship. We also saw some huge dial improvements to this thing. It gains some red three-speed turns, its three banks are now white, and it now has a three-straight blue maneuver, so it has another way to clear stress from those red actions.
Yeah, the Hawk really struggled at moving fast. Yeah, so opening up those three-speed maneuvers, lowering their difficulty, adding extra maneuvers, really going to help out. Pair that with that red boost, and this thing is going to seem way faster than it used to. But it also can be slower. It also got a red stop. So now you can threaten quite a few different positions with your Hawk instead of being fairly predictable. It usually didn't matter what maneuver you set with your Hawk. Your opponent had a pretty good idea of where you're going to end up because you just didn't have that many options. Now that is definitely not going to be the case.
Yeah, you can threaten anything from a red stop to a three bank maneuver, which are pretty distinct ending positions.
And your opponent's going to really want to anticipate where you end up. Because we have some pretty powerful control pilot abilities that all require the targeted ship to be inside your firing arc. So they're going to want to look at where you have your arc set and anticipate where you're going to land or rotate it to so that they can dodge your arc accordingly, because your opponent's ships aren't going to want to land in your Hawk's firing arc.
Yeah, it was cool to see Paul of Godalhi, which was probably the best Scum Hawk pilot you could have in 1st edition, kind of retain his ability. At the start of the engagement phase, you may choose one enemy ship in your firing arc at range 0 to 2. If you do, transfer one focus or evade token from that ship to yourself. So, essentially the same here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a great pilot ability. I mean, the Hawks have always had great pilot abilities. It was what made you take the terrible platform to start with. But now that the platform's improved, I mean, you just get even more value out of that pilot ability. And, I mean, actions are much more of a commodity in this second edition. So taking your opponent's sole focus token is going to be much more devastating.
And I actually think I need to point out they showed off Dace Bonearm's pilot ability for the Hawk, which I think shows off an interesting point of the charge design in 2nd edition here. So in the 1st edition, Dace actually did a damage whenever enemy ship got ion, something like that. Not particularly usable in the game. We saw an update to that ability. After an enemy ship at range 0 to 3 receives at least one ion token, you may spend 3 charge counters. If you do, that ship gains 2 additional ion tokens. So first off, this ability makes your ions more effective, which is cool. But it also comes on a platform with just 3 regenerating charge counters, and you only get one of those back per turn. So we see some interesting design space here for 2nd edition.
Right, so at best you can only use that ability every 3 turns, which, yeah, absolutely, is very cool design.
I'm just really excited for that because I can see that application on a bunch of new abilities in the future of the game where we can have charge abilities that are more granular than just being once per round or once per game or once per turn. You can actually set it up so it's like once every several turns, potentially, which is something we couldn't even get close to in first edition, where there were just very limited tools that developers had to limit the number of times an ability could be used.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a cool design, and actually I think Dace looks pretty exciting. Originally, it was all about Polub and Torkoal. Those are the all-stars of the Hawk Life. But I think it's cool that all three of these control ships, you know, we have the initiative control from Torkoal, the action control from Polub, and then ion control from Dace. You can really choose whatever sort of terrible things you want to do to your opponent. And all of these Hawks also come with that red jam action, providing even more control. And what's cool, like, all those abilities trigger off of your ship being in the Hawk's firing arc, but it doesn't specify which firing arc. Which is really cool because I honestly just realized a few days ago that the Scumhawk can also take the Moldy Crow title. I thought just the Rebel ones could. Bit of an oversight on my part, but this is crazy. I mean, I was going to be excited about these Scumhawks even if I couldn't take that Moldy Crow title, but getting a 3-dice forward arc, and then you also still have your rotating 2-dice arc, means it's going to be really difficult for your opponent to avoid those pilot abilities.
Well, the Multicrow also lets you hold on to some focus tokens there, which makes these ships a lot more durable.
Oh yeah, and when Paul was taking those focus tokens, it's going to be great that I can save them turn after turn.
So there you have it, guys. A quick breakdown of that Scum and Villainy conversion kit that we're going to see when X-Wing 2nd Edition launches in September, with early release at Gen Con. This finishes off our look at these conversion kits, at least what we've seen so far. New cards are getting spoiled every day, and we're learning more and more new things about the second edition of the game. So we're going to have a lot more content in the coming weeks and months leading up to the launch.
All right, Tim, before I let you go, what non-Polyb ship are you most excited to fly from the Scum faction?
You know, I think I got to pick Guri and that Star Viper there. I'm really excited for the potential that Star Vipers could be good in second edition, and Guri looks really cool with that pilot ability. Really excited to see some Star Vipers out on the table again. What about you? What are you most excited for besides Polyb?
I'm torn. There's really so many great options. Using Scum Boba Fett with that Slave One title, it's really combining both of the two original Boba Fett pilot abilities, which I think sounds really exciting. I also really want to put a M3A Interceptor on the table. They're just such cool looking ships. And I have one painted up to match my Hawk, so they'll probably both see the table together.
Lots of cool stuff to look forward to. I'm still really excited for the release of 2nd Edition in September. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why other people might be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.